Oh, look, our foots are touching.
I shaved my legs for you today because I hadn't shaved them in 3 weeks. I was like, oh my God, I'm wearing short trousers. And I didn't even like just do that shaving thing to there. I even shaved my toes for you.
I'm afraid I did not shave my legs for you. But however, what I am going to do is...
Oh my God, have you been recording
I'm
that?
I'm recording that. I am going to mind my language. And I hope that as we record this episode, you might mind your language too. Can we have on record right now that you are going to mind your language?
What do you mean, not swear?
Yes.
I'm going to try my very best. I never make a promise that I can't keep, so I'm not going to commit to anything, but I'm going to cross my fingers and hope that I don't drop.
Now you can listen to this episode to the very end and find out whether Anna manages to successfully do that.
Thanks. No pressure.
Welcome to the Mimwood Podcast, where we occasionally have normal and sensible grown-up conversations about our own journeys of losing weight. I'm a member, Anna's a consultant, and we are sponsored by Slimming World, but these are our own personal experiences and stories, where we kind of talk about the weird ramblings of how we are continuing our weight loss journey with Slimming World and all the weird things that we encounter as we do it. What yeah. weird things have you encountered lately, Anna?
What weird things? Oh, Slimming World wise, yeah. food wise, I'm encountering a lot of people trying to do very, very interesting things with jackfruit. Not only you, but members making the most obscure things with jackfruit. It's surprising me. Jackfruit and banana blossom. What can be done? Have you tried banana blossom?
I've heard that you can like keep the banana peels in your fridge and then basically they turn into like some kind of crazy meaty things.
Really?
Yeah, I've heard about that. But then, you know, a lot of the things that I've been hearing in group recently is about tweaks as well.
Yes.
And, you know, catching people out when you're doing loads of chickpeas or, you know, when you've got the lasagna sheets and you're making Doritos out of them.
I think what we're spotting is that people trying to do abnormal things with normal food.
Yeah, and there was this hilarious moment in my group last week where we all realised that normal people wouldn't go so far. Like, someone posted on a Facebook group, well, what was it? Something about a cream egg, how to make a cream egg out of asparagus or something like that.
Yeah, out of cauliflower. Because if I can make a pizza out of cauliflower, I can make a cream egg. Yeah, I think what I experience a lot is trying to get the very most out of free food in such obscure ways that it's not even going to taste any good,
yeah.
is it? Do you know what I mean? If you kind of blitzing down things, like I did it with couscous. Do you remember I told you about making the chicken goujons with the couscous? And Phil said it was like eating bullets because I hadn't cooked the couscous. Just in some breadcrumbs, Anna. Yeah, so I think more and more I'm hearing obscure things with new plant-based things because that's very off the back of Veganuary, was it? We're now into February. People are continuing this and I'm surprised at the people
February. Needs a better word.
I know, but people who still aren't drinking. Dry January has carried on to February. Have you noticed that?
Well, I'm there.
Yeah, so am I, but I have found like at least 40% of my members are not drinking.
Wow.
I know. In some groups, that is the most phenomenal achievement I've seen.
Incredible. Well, you know, let us know if you're new to us. Welcome, by the way. And let us know kind of where are you at? What are you doing? We've got a listener's questions episode coming up in the next couple of weeks. So we're looking to hear your thoughts of things that you're kind of getting caught out with. Is there any help that you might need or just your comments? You know, let us know where you're at. We're on Instagram, by the way. You can come and see photos and interact with us on that. We do lives and we do stories and all kinds of things. We're at Slimming World Podcast. You can also send us an email for those of you who prefer some more long-winded conversation. slimmingworldpodcast@gmail.com. And please don't forget to hit follow if you're on Spotify, subscribe if you listen to us on Apple Podcasts, and rate and review us so we can share this with more people. But yeah, the aim of this podcast is that we just offer a little bite-sized mojo every Monday, and we'll have a bit of a giggle doing it sometimes as well.
But we're not doctors, are we, Claire? I like to think I am a medic, but we're not. So no. please know what we're saying is our own journeys and advice, but do check things out with your consultant or a medical professional if you feel you need to, because this is just our journeys and our experience in it.
Mm. And actually, it was really interesting putting this episode together, because one of the things that we've always been really passionate about in our personal journeys has been about kind of getting this lifestyle habit and managing your mind, and that's why I called this episode managing your mind, not just your waistline, because half the battle, I think, of losing weight is just kind of breaking those cycles, breaking the habits of why do we always do certain things.
Yeah.
You know, in my journey many years ago, I hadn't really learnt to cook. I hadn't any idea about nutrition in food. I hadn't even really eaten any fruit. And I had to go back to school, really. And that's what Slim World enabled me to do when I first joined 8 years ago.
And you're vegan now. Can we just
well,
say
I'm plant-based.
Oh, right. Yes. Okay. Yes. Is that the new word?
Well, vegan means that you're kind of doing all the clothes and...
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah, I'm not quite there yet.
Are you planning to be?
I don't know.
But how amazing from this girl who never cooked and who made eight ready meals and processed food, and now you're plant-based.
It's like 2 years ago... I weighed, you know, 5 stone heavier than I do now. And I was eating Domino's.
You could do that plant-based.
other pizza makers are available, I should say that.
Yeah.
But I was eating takeaways and deliveries probably about 3 times a week. I was drinking maybe a bottle of Prosecco every other night. Going out drinking pints of cider black. Ooh. You know, I was, and bars of chocolate. I'd never buy a small one or a treat size one. I'd always buy like a huge one.
Yeah.
And there was something within me where I would just keep eating and keep eating and keep eating. There wasn't an off switch. And I thought at some point I would just get full, but I never did.
Because you're emotionally not full.
Yeah.
It's
and
mad,
so
isn't it?
It's crazy now to see where I'm getting to.
Yeah.
I'm still, you're never fixed, are you, in this stuff?
No, I think it's a process. I've been on this process 20 years and I think fixing my mind has been my biggest battle, because your mind doesn't always get as quick to follow as the weight loss. Do you know what I mean? Like, you can lose the weight physically, but mentally you have to do a lot of work, and it's so deeply ingrained, isn't it? And it's about making those new connections in your mind about the new you and the new habits. But I think you should be so proud of yourself, plant-based, 5 stone lighter, homeowner.
I know.
It's mad, isn't it?
We're sat on my second sofa.
Aren't we? In your office, darling.
I say office. I mean, it looks okay.
Do you know what, though?
I'm getting there. You know, when you move house at this time of year, it's quite a lot to kind of... I mean, I've still got the wood chip wallpaper and the lampshade. That's quite horrific.
But we've noticed we've both got the same horrific lampshade, haven't we? It's crazy. But I think, you know, the thing that I've learned, us together on this podcast, is about celebrating the wins psychologically as well, and celebrating the fact that you are making habit changes physically and mentally, and how impactful how you speak to yourself, how you speak to others about yourself really is. Do you know what I've noticed about you since I've known you?
Okay.
That you speak about yourself much more positively than when I first met you.
Yeah.
And that's a really interesting thing to see in people when they lose weight and they change their lives, that they don't berate themselves to you. You take a compliment now, and you'd never do that before.
That's true.
Yeah. It's a really interesting journey to watch someone else on, because I think we often talk about how I've lost weight, but it was so long ago. I'm on the final tip of my weight loss journey, but watching you evolve into this new person has been very exciting to watch, like a proud big sister, because I'm nearly blinking 40, but let's not talk about that.
We should probably explain, actually, that Anna has been my consultant for the past couple of years, so that's
until
how
you
she
just
knows
divorced me.
I haven't divorced you.
She's
moved away
from me.
And I'm finding new groups. But
she doesn't even come visit no more.
Oh, get over yourself. Well, anyway, back to the subject at hand. On this podcast series, we've got a ton of back catalogue. So if you're just kind of catching up and new, there's all kinds of things that we've talked about, from like letting guilt go, forgiveness, emotional eating,
loneliness,
mind over matter. So it's been like a recurring theme. So if you like this kind of subject material and you want more, then there's a ton of other podcasts that you can go and binge listen to. But the reason we ended up doing this one, as we're kind of working with Slimming World these days, they gave us a heads up about this new survey, which they did in the beginning of January, which was titled Mind Your Language, How Self-Talk Affects Weight and Body Image. And what you're going to hear in a minute is an interview that I did with a behavioural psychologist. And she kind of goes into a bit more detail about what the survey means and what they found, and some kind of just better insight, really, which helped, I think it helped me think, oh, it's not just me that thinks that. Other people feel like that too, right?
And also just some really basic things about what you can do to help yourself, just things that you might not have thought about. It's so interesting how much of this is psychological, isn't it?
Well, look, we'll kind of dip out here and we'll come back at the end to kind of give you our little kind of afterthoughts, so to speak. But in the meantime, grab that cup of tea and maybe get a notepad and a pen. There's going to be tons of quotes that you're going to want to note down in your journal if you are doing that kind of thing, and plenty of things to kind of think about, you know, and how your mind works when it comes to weight loss. So enjoy kind of delving deep into what happens with language, behavior, and our mind when it comes to weight loss. Well, Anna would be very, very jealous because, you know, I've got a silver teacup in front of me, a cup and a saucer, and I'm in a very swish part of London. She would be very jealous because I'm not in the wind and the rain and we're not in a car. But I'm really excited to share with you a guest on our podcast, which we don't often do very often, but Dr. Linda Papadopoulos, it's so lovely to finally meet you. How do you want to kind of explain, how do you kind of connect yourself to Slimming World?
Yeah, sure. So I guess as anyone that's followed my work knows, body image has been something that's been kind of a key part of a lot of the work that I've done, both research-wise and clinically. And within that, disordered eating and eating disorders. So I guess my role has always been to try and understand what compels us to engage in eating behaviors that aren't healthy, whether it's restricting or overeating, and how we can kind of use the way that we think about food and self-care and I guess our lives and experiences in general, to, you know, how we can understand those and how we can use those things to inform our eating behaviors. So that would be the link.
So you've been a big part of a survey which has come out with Slimming World fairly recently. Let's just run through some of the headlines, because it's talking about mind and language. And what I found really interesting, so there was just over 2,000 adults that they did the survey on at the end of 2019. And half of the people were Slimming World members, but half weren't Slimming World members, just to kind of set the scene so people can see this. So here's some of the headlines. It says almost 2/3 of Brits struggle with their weight or body image. And I think that surprised me, actually, that most people are struggling somewhere in their mind about this. Often when you go through a weight loss journey, you can feel quite isolated and feel like you're the only one that's kind of having these thoughts and feeling that. But 2/3, I mean, did that surprise you?
No. it didn't, again, because this is something I've been aware of for a long time. Look, we live in a society where appearance and weight are not just indicators of health, but they become indicators of status and success. They become tape measures. They become things to beat ourselves up about, to praise ourselves for, to feel guilty about. So, you know, especially in this kind of very visual age that we live in, where we're constantly posting, you know, whether it's pictures of our breakfast or pictures of our abs, you know, the idea that we think about weight more, the idea that we ruminate over, you know, food more is not unsurprising at all.
You know, it's talking here, like 1/3 of people who struggle with their weight or body language say that friends, family or partners negatively affect their self-esteem on a daily basis. So like our inner circle is actually affecting it. You know, how do we kind of learn to handle that, and what impact does that have?
Look, I think this to me was kind of, and what I love about Slimming World is I guess they're like me, they're like nerds at heart, and we try and figure out where this stuff's coming from. And just kind of, you know, discussing the results, I think for many people, this idea of being hurt comes because they don't alert their family or their friends to how they feel about things. So we know it's a very British thing, this idea of a stiff upper lip, and this idea of banter, which actually sometimes is, you know, they're disguised insults, right? So, you know, and if we aren't sort of conditioned to kind of say, do you know what, when you say X, I feel Y, then X continues. Not necessarily because the person across from you is a bad person or wants to hurt you, but because it becomes kind of that rhythm of that discourse. The other problem that I think often happens is that people very falsely think that, you know, you don't realize that you need to lose weight. Or, you know, so if I tell you, if I'm kind of like, well, that doesn't look good, then that's going to be motivating. If only that were true, you know, if only it were true that a horrible comment or an insensitive comment would be enough. Of course, it isn't. And look, I need to stop here and kind of be nuanced about this, because I think there's going to be a lot of people listening that are going to say, well, hold on a second. I remember that, you know, my friend said to me, hey, you know, this isn't good. You can do better. And that spurred me to get some help. And I think, you know, the nuance is this, that it's about moving from defining a problem to finding a solution. The problem is, for most of us, when we are told, you know, you look awful, or when we think to ourselves, you're not good enough, we don't actually make a decision. All we do is we kind of almost pick at a scab, right? We ruminate and we get stuck. And what happens when we get stuck? When we get stuck thinking, you know, I don't like this aspect of myself, that then just, you know, feeds into our self-esteem. I don't like my legs turns very quickly into I don't like my body, turns very quickly into I don't like myself. And what happens with I don't like myself? Well, I don't feel I have the capacity to make any positive change. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to stay comfortable in my discomfort, and I'm going to keep engaging in negative health behaviors.
You know, one of the things that I've been reading a lot about at the moment, like a book that has kind of changed my way of thinking, is The Chimp Paradox. You know, Google this if you're listening, you've never heard about it, but it talks about managing the little chimp in your mind and how we're almost programmed as humans to accept negativity as default, and that primitive kind of style, you know, part of our brain wants to kind of stay in familiarity and what's safe. And I definitely found when I was going, you know, at my biggest, that it kind of became quite normal to really abuse myself. I know that's a strong word, but it became quite normal to medicate using food. You know, it was the way that I learned to cope. So kind of getting out of that way of talking to ourselves. Sometimes we don't even realize that we're doing that. I mean, like, you know, you kind of think of some of the phrases that that people will use, failure, shame, hopelessness, you know, feeling invisible, being embarrassed and comfortable. I think it's really interesting when people find whatever it is, that turning point where you're like, enough, I'm done with this. You know, I went on a holiday with my family for my mom's 60th, and she's really important to me. And I looked at the photos when I came back and I thought, I hate them all. I absolutely hate all of those photos. And that was the turning point for me, where I kind of looked at those photos and thought, you look fat, you look ugly, what the hell are you doing to yourself? And that was the mirror for me to make that change. But quite often, that kind of talk, people don't realize that they've been doing that to themselves or feeling that way for a long time. So, I mean, how do you kind of start to break the cycle and spot, you know, learn to kind of stop and hear yourself, hit pause, and then start to reprogram that? Because it's quite a big task, isn't it, really?
Do you know what? It is, but also we have a lot of data that suggests that it's a very doable task. It's quite prescriptive. So what do we need to do? I think first we need to identify the negative thoughts. I often say to people, a great way of doing this is to catch a feeling for you. I'm feeling bad. And think about, what am I thinking right before that feeling, right? So you and I, for example, are sitting here and we're having a lovely time. Imagine somebody that we knew walked by and didn't say hi. Now, if I have that sinking feeling, I probably have that sinking feeling because I think, oh my gosh, they didn't say hi. Did I say something to offend them? You know, had I upset them in some way? You feel fine because you're probably thinking, well, they didn't see me. So we both had the same experience. Someone walked by and didn't say hi. But your thought is actually quite functional. Mine's probably quite dysfunctional, because either way, me worrying about it and getting all stressed out isn't going to help. You know, even if I was thinking that, probably the best thing I could have done was to say hi first, right? So it's about learning to spot the negative thoughts. And you spot the negative thoughts by spotting the negative emotions. So I would tell people out there, I would keep a diary. Every time you feel low, what am I thinking and what am I feeling? What's the situation? Once you do that, it's important to begin looking for cognitive errors, right? So what do shrinks talk about when they talk about cognitive errors? Well, they're actually, it's ways of thinking irrationally. So the idea of, like, for example, all or nothing thinking. So I'm on a new health kick, either I'm always perfect and doing, you know, going to the gym 7 days a week and, you know, just eating, you know, fill in the blank salad or reducing this or that. Or I'm a disgusting failure who is never going to be healthier, never going to look good, and I should hate myself. Actually, I would argue all of us, not even most of us, I would argue all of us are somewhere in between, right? So being able to kind of spot those patterns in language, I always do this, I'm never good enough, everyone is better, those superlatives, nobody will like me. Catch that language and turn it around. What's the evidence? What is the evidence that because today I didn't go to the gym or I had a slip up with whatever, you know?
I mean, slimming world is really interesting because often you hear in group actually where people will say they were good or they were bad or they were off plan or they were on plan. You know, maybe there's a couple of days where they didn't eat a food optimized meal, they had too many sins, and then you beat yourself up because you think, oh, I've ruined it now, I'm just going to throw the towel in for the rest of this week.
Well, this is it, and one of the things that you need to realize is that you know, you need to be micro ambitious, right? So the big ambition is to lose X amount of weight, but throughout the day, being micro ambitious is really helpful. And how do we do that? I always tell people, focus on action rather than outcome, right? So it may not be that every day this week I did whatever I was trying to do, but I did get down to the gym. I'm going to kind of give myself for X amount of days.
That's great. So focus on action, not outcome. That's incredible. That's a great statement right there.
Yeah, well, it's vital in anything in life, right? You know, nothing falls into our laps, right? But we do enough of you think enough of the good thoughts right away, then the outcome will come. Why? Because instead of having negative automatic thoughts, you begin to have more rational, positive automatic thoughts. So you just need to get into that rhythm. And I think also, I'm a big one for sort of curating my consciousness, right? So, you know, you and I, before we started speaking, we were also speaking about this idea of how many podcasts are out there and everything. Yeah. Think about, who are you listening to? Who are the people? What are you reading? How sensitized are you to all of this influx of information and this over-information? So being selective about, you know, wanting to make the right choice and the people, the ideas, the thoughts that will help you is key as well.
Yeah. I mean, a big part of this report kind of talks about the people who were who kind of answered the survey, who were Slimming World members, really found that going to group helped them because they'd meet like-minded people. So you understand then when you kind of surround yourself by people who lift you, don't tear you down, and you're reading, like even just curating like your newsfeed on Instagram, on Facebook, just kind of, yeah, whatever messages you're kind of inhaling without even thinking about just really makes a difference. I mean, really intrigued, like, why do we self-deprecate? What is the purpose of it?
I think there's a few things that came out of the research that we did with Slimming World. I think for some people, it's a defense mechanism, right? So if we meet and I tell you, oh, look at how fat I am, look at how I'm a glutton, look, I put myself down before you do, I feel in control, right? I'm managing the narrative. I know that you see what I see and I'm going to tell you. Part of it's that. Part of it is people think they actually might motivate themselves. They think if I scream at myself, if I'm angry at myself enough, then that'll be it. That'll, you know, if I say it enough times, that's what's going to make me make the right choices. You know, and of course, that's not the case. And I think finally, and really sort of, I think worryingly, we self-deprecate because we just get into that cycle of doing it. So to quote the chimp paradox and what goes on there, you know, we worry because there's a protective function in worry, right? If I'm worrying about what's happening, I somehow feel protected by it. In the same way, if I sort of self-deprecate, I kind of feel like I'm on top of something in a way, right? Of course that isn't true. Like, you know, like worrying about something doesn't stop it from happening, and being horrible to myself doesn't mean that all of a sudden I'm going to change. So by all means, like, and I go back to nuance, because, you know, I'm very clear. Like you said, you saw the picture, you thought, I don't like this, you made a change. But the difference between what you did there and what you could have done is that you turned that emotion into action. So you moved from there and thought, you know what, I may not look the way that I like the way they look, but I friggin' love the fact that I can do something about it. And I like that when I, you know, when I've tried to put my mind to something in the past, and it may not have been in terms of food, it may have been in terms of a relationship or a course that you did or something, I can do it. And you quickly turned it into something positive. And I think that's the message I want to get, you know, people to hear from this research. What we're saying is, of course it's normal to have those days where you put yourself down, but if you can change that and kind of think, okay, what do I like about myself and how can I move forward and change what I'm not happy with, then that's the key.
You know, talking about like photos, for instance, I just saw there was a couple doing a selfie behind you, which was I don't know why they were doing that. There's basically a couple of phone boxes. Maybe they were doing that. It's London. People do that all the time, don't they? But, you know, even now, I've lost a significant amount of weight since that photo was taken a couple of years ago. I still look at photos now and cringe and don't feel comfortable with it. And I'm imagining that a lot of people listening to this, photos, in actual fact, thinking about some people who... we talked about our reasons why in group a few months ago, and one lady said that she's got no photos of her with her kids because she just hated seeing herself in photos. So all the photos are just of her taking of the kids, but never her with them. And if they are, they're only face up. Yeah, I totally understand that. You know, there's a reason that I work in podcasts and radio, because I've kind of protected myself. You know, you kind of start to narrate your life and move in a certain way where you don't have to see your face. Well, I don't even have a full-length mirror, you know?
You've got a beautiful face and you're a gorgeous girl, but I mean that genuinely. And yeah. I just think, again, someone who studies body image, you know, body image is a subjective thing. It doesn't matter what I say. It doesn't matter. You know that very well. And the way you will look in yourself in the mirror is never going to be through a clear set of lenses. Those lenses are smeared with comments and comparisons and put downs and magazines. We know that. So, you know, I think a big part of kind of going through this process is understanding that, you know, it's never the problem that's a problem. It's your perception of the problem that's a problem. How has your perception been tainted by those messages? And also, look, you know, I think there's something really important about embracing our imperfections, right? So maybe that girl in the photo is not the girl that you wanted to look like, but she's, for goodness sake, she's the girl that got you. She's the girl that made you a successful, you know, journalist at the BBC. She's the girl that's making you a success now, who's, you know, who's connected and been loved and loved herself. So to denigrate her down to the fact that, yeah, but she was the wrong size, is being really disrespectful to you. And I think, you know, that's an important thing for all of us to hear. You know, I don't think anyone out there, bar very, very few, like, look at a photo and kind of think, yes, I'm all that. Most of us look and think, would have been good if it was this or that. But, you know, you should be damned if you let that bully in your head make you denigrate that aspect of who you are, because who you are today is because of that young woman.
Yeah, yeah. You know, often people say, well, I wouldn't talk like that to a friend, so why would I say it to myself?
Of course, absolutely. Yeah. And look, you know, someone might, you know, who studied... sort of, again, a lot of the research I did in my early years was in psychoneuroimmunology, the way that the mind affects us physiologically. So thoughts aren't these intangible things, Claire. I think this is what people need to get a hold of. If I sit there all day thinking negative thoughts, it will not just affect the way I see myself, you know, my emotions and my psychology. It can affect me physiologically as well. So, you know, if you can get to a place where you decide to kind of, you know, take some responsibility for those thoughts, you know, don't just sort of sit back and let them wash over, catch them. What is the evidence? You know, what is the evidence? Have it push back. And eventually, in the same way that you've become used to just being negative and seeing the dark side, you can turn it around. You know, I work, you know, again, there's lots of studies out there. This one of my favorite ones is I get people with depression to remember random words, right? So you have a group of people that are depressed, a group of people that aren't depressed. People that aren't depressed will remember words like cup and table and book. People that are depressed will be much more likely to remember weather, bad weather, gray, sadness, death. Why? Because our brain is seeking that out. So it's about retraining your brain. And so those small things that you can do to catch out that negative side of you keep.
Yeah, I think I've heard, is it capture, challenge, change, or something like that?
There's a lot of acronyms, yeah. That's one.
You know, and the whole, like, you are what you think. I do get that. It's something that I think I've yo-yoed over my diet for the last 15 years, really. And what's really cracked it in the last 2 years, I've been a slimming woman for 8 years. So the last 2 years, I've kind of started to crack it and has been starting to manage my mind. So I can kind of really look at some of this and think, yeah, I kind of see where you're going. So, you know, if there was like kind of top tips that you were kind of saying, how can we manage our self-talk? Like just like one small step, what would you say that first step is?
First step is I would begin by kind of catching those thoughts. So keep a diary, right? throughout the day, what are the things that make me feel sad? So think about where I am, what's the situation, what am I feeling, and what is the thought associated, right? So it may be that an ad comes up around for about summer holidays. So whereas you'd like to think, oh, that looks like a really lovely beach, you think, oh my gosh, the kids are wanting to go to the beach. I don't look bad. I'm a terrible mother because now it means that I won't be able to play with them. All right, what's another way of looking at this? How can I push back on that thought? Now, I'm thinking about a pretty good mom, you know, I mean, in a lot of ways. And you know what? Not loving the way that I look on the beach, but I should have a sense of entitlement to be on that beach, to feel the sun on my shoulders and the sand on my toes and to play with my kids. And yeah, if I want to feel more comfortable in my own skin, then I can increase my self-care. And what does that mean? It doesn't mean berating myself. It means like, you know what? I deserve better than to kind of self-harm. Because we talk about self-medicating with food, but I think a lot of us end up self-harming with food. You know, we eat when we don't want it. We almost eat to punish ourselves, to feed into this negative narrative. So take control. So that would be my top tip. Sort of catch that thought, push back on it, and begin to make a change.
You know, just seeing as I have you here and this is your specialism, one of the things that I've kind of really looked at is addiction, actually. And so I've kind of been going through quite a purge. You know, I've quit alcohol over the last couple of years, and obviously food managing. And I realised that food for me was like, it was my drug of choice. You know, the emotional eating was a coping mechanism, really, of how to avoid and not feel pain, to push it away. What are your kind of thoughts about, like, you know, is food addiction a real thing?
Well, certainly certain types of substances. We know sugar is very addictive to the brain. We know that the microbiome in your stomach can make you feel, so, you know, that's a part of it. I have an issue, though, with the idea of addiction meaning that you're beholden to it. You know, look, genotype, phenotype, we're all born with predispositions to certain illnesses, to kind of having more or less kind of predispositions to addictions. I don't think that means that you can't make a change, right? Yeah. You can absolutely make a change. We have a lot of data on this. For some of us, it's easier. For some of us, it's harder. But it's doable. And you just need to find what motivates you. And I think that would be the big take home here. Because, look, there's no power without responsibility, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, and my worry is always when we speak about addiction, and I certainly do understand the way that it works. I understand, you know, and the effects on the brain, biochemistry, all of that. But regardless of that, if I can take responsibility for what I can take responsibility for, and that's what I shouldn't put my focus on, rather than the stuff that I can't take responsibility for that's out of my control.
It just sometimes seems like there was a situation in the office where I used to work, and there was loads of free food, cakes, chocolates, everything. And I kind of look at that situation and would be, oh my God, it's free food. I need to eat as much of it as possible. How many times can I go up before someone tells me to stop? And I looked at, kind of observed one day, kind of hit pause and did the old surf the urge kind of thing, and observed other people going to that table, and they would just kind of have a look and say, there's nothing really here that floats my boat, and walk away and not eat anything. And I was like, how do some people kind of have that relationship with food? And then sometimes it feels like me and other members of my group are a bit like, geez, this thing has kind of got hold of us, and we've kind of got to manage it. You know, it's not something that you fix or are cured by. You can't take a pill to fix it.
Well, no, we can do better than taking a pill, I think.
Yeah.
I think you can change, like, we know there's a lot of brain hacks around that, right? You can change the language around food. So there's a lot of research around, if I was to offer you cake now, instead of saying, oh, Linda, I can't have it, if you were to say, I don't want it, even if you do want it, saying I don't want it immediately changes that narrative. And don't forget, we're trying to make neuronal connections here. You feel that you should eat because it's this great pleasure. What other pleasures are there in life? How do you feel now that you can wear clothes that you didn't, you know, that you've always wanted to wear, that you can move more easily, that you can take them? There's other pleasures. And also there's this idea about, you know, stopping. I kind of think this is such a culture thing. I laugh because I'm Greek, right? So in my country, my mom you know, when she puts out food, it would be bad if she gave you food that you'd finish, because it would show that she hadn't given you enough food. So she loads people. So my friends come over for England, and it's like, it's the worst possible combination, because they feel they need to clear their plates. My mom feels mortified that they've cleared their plates. She piles on more food. They bless them, feel they need to be. And so again, this idea of finishing what's on your plate. You're not a garbage can. If you're full, listen to your stomach. Let it be. You can save it for tomorrow. You know, cook. You know, there's ways around this. There's ways of, you know, reestablishing those neuronal connections about what I should and shouldn't be doing. And you can learn that. And once you've learned it and practiced it and embedded it, it becomes a way of life.
I mean, do you practice what you preach? Like, do you ever sometimes, because you're someone who's been on TV loads, like, do you ever kind of have that kind of doubt or worry about, you know, what people think and say? How do you kind of protect yourself from that?
Look, people are gonna talk, right? So, you know, I do what I feel is best for me. Do I have days when I feel, you know, I look, you know, not so great, days when I feel I look great? Yeah, like everybody. But in terms of kind of my relationship with food, it's always, I've got to say, it's been healthy, because I've never felt that I should be defined by how fat or thin I am. I've kind of, you know, I've always loved my highlights, but I love my PhD more. You know, I've kind of, you know, defined myself, you know, by things that I feel, you know, are bigger than that. And sort of, and again, I've always said this with my little girl, when anyone, and I think this is very true for women, when anyone's ever said, oh, isn't she pretty, when she was, you know, growing up, I'd say, yeah, she's amazing at math and really good at kickboxing. Because you know what? The way that we look, that changes, that passes. You don't want to put all your self-esteem eggs in that basket. So for me, you know, I enjoy food, but I enjoy health, and I enjoy reading, and I enjoy a lot of other things. And it's, you know, I like to think that my world is bigger than that. And I've been lucky, maybe, in that that's been something that's either been imbued in me, or I got to grips with quite early on. But I know that it's something that we can learn. And I think that should be liberating, because, you know, it's out there.
Yeah. You know, in terms of weight loss and people kind of understanding their why, I just want to kind of tap into that, because it's really interesting that you're saying about what motivates us. How if people are kind of really struggling to find that motivation, quite often people kind of come to listen to this podcast because they use us like as a group in between group, you know, when they're kind of having those wobbles, and we publish on a Monday morning when sometimes the weekend's gone a bit hairy. How can kind of people really connect with what is truly motivating them? And also that changes throughout our journey as well. You know, initially when we start a big weight loss, it kind of changes when you're nearer the end.
It does. And look, and I think there's a lot of reasons, right? And I think one of the biggest ones is health. You know, you need, look, a big part of kind of being good at life is learning to take care of our health and the basics. I kind of think like the tripod is sleeping, eating, and moving. You know, if you're not getting those things right, there's a multitude of illnesses that derive from that. Not to mention just a general feeling of not ill well-being. Like, you know, you don't have that. So I think just kind of finding the key for you. And yeah, when you start off, it might be fitting into this dress or getting to that wedding and being able to kind of speak to that person. But ultimately, it needs to be about kind of the value of the self. And that comes with good self-esteem, which, to go back to the research, means stop speaking to yourself in a horrible way. Stop berating yourself. It's fine to have good days and bad. It's fine to look in the mirror some days and think, ugh, I don't like this. But remember what you do like. You know, ultimately, you need to be bigger than this weight loss. You need to be bigger than this number you're striving for.
And kind of remembering, I guess you were saying about the not kind of putting so much emphasis on what you look like, but also remembering who you are and what do you bring to the table? What do you want to be remembered for and known for?
Absolutely. I always tell when I think of body image, I'm like, well, what are the people you really admire? And, you know, yeah, whether they say Nelson Mandela or Bill Gates, imagine if I then said, well, what do they look like? How much do they weigh? You'd be like, what? Like, what is silly? Yet, for ourselves, well, clearly that's so. You know what? We need to get past that, you know? And in many ways, I'm hopeful. I do a lot of work in kind of the area of the online world. And I think, you know, we've had this real kind of binge of photos and editing and this and that. And I kind of think, you know, hopefully we're beginning to see sort of the wizard behind the curtain sort of pulling these strings, which actually, you know, the real important stuff doesn't lie in kind of like that symmetrical phase or that, you know, perfect waist to hip ratio. It kind of lies in acceptance of self, acceptance of others, and the pursuit of betterment, not for the sake of living up to a script, but for the sake of kind of being better able to enjoy life and the people and the things we love.
Initially, you used the word perfect there, because that was a word that haunted me for a number of years. I think a lot of people as well, as you say, you know, you were saying originally about social media, and then I'm slowly learning that it's okay to be imperfect. Actually, it's human. You're not human if you kind of put that pressure on yourself to be the perfect employee, the perfect business owner, the perfect girlfriend.
It's unrealistic. I mean, what is feeling that perfection gets you is a feeling that you're constantly not good enough, because it's not a real thing. Perfection is captured in a moment, the perfect cup of ginger tea.
And it was very perfect. It was lovely.
There we go. But it's not. It's like happiness. I think there's a. To me, I don't like the notion. I think, and as a psychologist, I think we've kind of need to be speaking about this. Happiness isn't a state that you reach and you're there. Right? Again, happiness is captured in a moment. So, you know, it's normal to struggle sometimes. It's normal to cry and have good days. And I think this pressure on, are you happy? What does that mean? Do you feel a sense of purpose? Do you feel supported? Do you feel that, you know, even if you're unhappy, that you'll get through this? These things are what we should strive for, rather than this Disney-esque, you know, I'm there now, I can stop.
I mean, I love all that, because one of the quotes that I was chasing for a while was, happiness is a direction, not a place. And it's so, so true, isn't it? Just that there isn't this mythical, magical place that you're ever going to reach where suddenly everything is okay.
No, there isn't.
Yeah.
It's, and I think the key is understanding that when you have those moments, you pause and you savor them. And you use them, you know, whether it's, I think friendship is great, sort of like having, like, never ceases to amaze me how many times we'll cancel work thing, friend things for work, yet, you know, not the other way around. I think it's if we can make that space, because we're social creatures, we need that. But also the way we speak to ourselves. One of my favorite things that I say is, no one speaks to you more than you speak to you, you know? How are you gonna do that?
Think we about are our own longest friends, aren't we? Really? Yeah, it's really a joy to speak to you.
Me too.
Thank you. I feel like I've topped up my quotes for the next couple of months.
I'm delighted. Yeah, you know what? These mantras, though, they're meaningful. You know, sort of we kind of you want to. You know, I think they're modern day wisdom that comes from. So, you know, it's as old as time, but kind of hold on to those things that help you remind yourself of them. I mean, as a final tip, that would be remind yourself of them when you can and use them to propel you forward, because we all need that impetus, and it's never going to be found in something that's bad for you, right? It's always going to be found in something that's good.
No, I mean, I have discovered that heavily gingered tea is definitely a new high on the list. So thank you for that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to be on. Thank you.
Ginger tea, Claire? What's ginger tea? Is it a blob of ginger in a glass of hot water?
You're like, who are you?
I mean, I'm a Londoner, but you're so London.
You went to a posh bar and you drank ginger tea, is what you're thinking.
Like, I know you're plant-based now, but this is next level.
Well, stop bugging on about it.
Only because I had the biggest steak in the world yesterday.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, loved it.
Oh, I'm going to be representing.
Come on, meat eaters.
Anyway, ginger tea was nice. It was more the, like, I didn't know where to put my pinky out.
Oh, little finger.
Yeah.
Oh,
right. Thanks for clarifying.
Was it like a teapot with leaf tea and some ginger? Tell me, because you didn't take me to the posh restaurant.
Yeah. I can't remember now whether you had to like put one of those strainers in, you know, that you forget.
Oh, my God.
But either way, it was sin-free and I was happy.
But was there chunks of ginger?
No. Oh. I don't know. I didn't look in the teapot.
What? That's what you do. Sorry, screaming at you guys. That's what you do.
Anyway, that's your takeaway. I just provided 30 minutes of conversation about your mind, and that's what she picks out. Ginger tea.
I picked up some really important things. It was really, she's fascinating, isn't she?
I'm sorry that you couldn't be with us.
Yeah, but you're really gutted that I couldn't do the posh restaurant. Do you know what really stood out? Anything stand out for me or you apart from the ginger tea? Because something really hit me between the eyes and I literally yelped with excitement when I heard it.
What?
Focus on the outcome. No, don't focus on the outcome.
You've even written the quote wrong. She's got notes, people.
No, I have. Look, Focus on the action, not the outcome. And you know what? That's what I talk about in group. Think about those habit changes. Think about the things that are going to impact you long term, not the little numbers that change.
So you mean like when people step on the scales and they have maintained, but they know they've tried that really hard that week. But then actually it turns out, well, they've done this, they've been to the gym 3 times, they've cooked 2 new meals that week. So actually focusing on that rather than the numbers on the scales is what you're saying, right?
So like I often walk the queue before group. I'm like, how's your week been? And I was like buzzing, you know, I did this. And then they got on the scales. And because it's not 4 stone off in 12 seconds, you become totally like you failed. But actually if you looked at all the things that you changed that week, the habits that you're starting to build on, that's to be celebrated. Because she talks about kind of making new neural pathways and making new connections in the brain. You've got to keep doing these things to make the habit kind of stick. That really, really got me. Also, spotting what you're doing language-wise, spotting what you're saying to yourselves. And I hear a lot in groups saying, oh, I'm not a big loser, me. Mm. Oh, I'm not one of those. I'm 0.5 pound a week. No, you don't have to be. You're programming yourself. You could go and lose 4 pounds next week. So I found that very interesting.
The thing that really kind of was on my mind when I was getting the tube the next few days was how she kind of said being at peace with like your old self.
Yes.
So actually the Claire that, you know, in my head is the Claire that got fat and went aloof and just like got me in a bit of a state and wasn't looking after herself. I'd kind of hated that version of Claire, but actually at the time that Claire was keeping me afloat on a lot of really difficult emotional things, a really stressful job.
She's got you to where you are now.
Yeah, and accepting that she weren't all that bad.
No,
but now I'm just a bit
overweight.
More of a, I'm still the same Claire, but I'm just a new and improved version.
Yeah, exactly.
And rather than just hating myself for that period of my time.
Because I think it's that interesting thing you say about photos. I used to look at photos of me and my dad and I hated what I looked like in that photo, but I forgave myself. And now my dad's not here anymore and I look at the photo and I think, I love that photo, it's me and my dad. Mm. Because I've forgiven the overweight Anna, the whatever Anna I was, and trying to embrace her now in that photo with dad and remembering that day. Because I think you take away a lot of the joy in your life by looking at what's bad. Like your holiday for your mum's 60th, brilliant holiday, amazing holiday. Yeah, you might have been 5 stone heavier, but now maybe you can look back at that photo and think, what a great holiday.
I have actually also made some changes on that since I did this interview.
Oh,
in that in my bedroom, I have a photo of me and my mum from that holiday now.
Oh, lovely.
Because I kind of accepted that that was what that was really about. And it's not like a full length photo or anything, but it's a photo from that holiday that I am able to kind of look back and think, no, it was a great time. And I don't need to let this thing about my weight, about my body image, define what my perception is of a particular moment.
And like, do you know, it's interesting, you know, when we had some photos done for the podcast, didn't we? And I was berating myself and then my hubby went, Anna, look what you guys have just achieved. Forget your 47th chin. Look what you've achieved. And I think sometimes we don't do that when we've got bad body image. We just think about what that photo at that time says, not the emotion. So yeah, we connect with it. I'm proud of you for that.
Yeah, I'm proud of you too, man.
Oh, well, we're proud. Very interesting though how deep it goes psychologically. Really, really is. And how it's years and years and years of self-talk. It really is. And actually just making some quick changes, but the consistency can really make a difference. When I had my first nervous breakdown, I read a book about how the negative thinking was kind of at the center of why I'd had this nervous breakdown, and just trying to recognize when you were thinking in a dark way. And I used to have periods in my life where I would ignore that day because I knew nothing I would think about would be positive. So I'd let these thoughts wash in and out, but I wouldn't concentrate on them. I'd only concentrate on the positive days. Mm. That really helped me get better. So I think in terms of weight loss, forgiving yourself the little slips and celebrating the wins. Did you have beetroot with your salad? Do you know what I mean? You had a blinking salad, celebrate it. Mm. You didn't eat the family size bar of chocolate. You only ate half of it.
Mm. I was reading an article online the other day, and whilst this was kind of on my mind anyway, because I've just been reading about it and editing the podcast, the interview with Linda, there was an article which talked about writing a letter to like yourself.
Oh, yes.
And almost kind of saying, and it made me think, I do a lot of my journaling anyway, and I've kind of got back to that. Now I've got a little bit more headspace. It's been a frantic 2 months, but I've got back into that. And just kind of writing a letter to that Claire that was fatter than I am now. Not fat clay. I'm not going to use that language. But
slightly
like,
more voluptuous.
Yes, yeah. Yes, the curvier version. Yeah. And kind of thanking her for helping me get through what was a difficult time, rather than being angry. So using, like, just kind of practicing and, yeah, letting go of things. It's just... I mean, I'd be really intrigued, you know, if you're listening to this and there's been quotes or there's been things that Linda said or that we've said that have really kind of made you think about something in a different perspective. I would really love to hear your stories. And this could really help us kind of bring any questions that you want to kind of get us to look into for listeners' questions, which come up in a couple of weeks, that we can kind of talk about. And go into a little bit deeper. Are you finding things like journaling is actually really helping you? Have you never really thought about your mindset, but you've done Slimming World on and off for many years and just always thought it was about food, but you've never thought about the mind stuff? You know, contact us on Instagram at Slimming World Podcast. You can email us slimmingworldpodcast@gmail.com and just share us your thoughts. They can even be confidential. If you don't want us to read them out, just reach out and just drop us a note.
Please make sure you put that in the message so that we don't read it out, because we love to share your comments and stuff, and we don't want to be sharing something that might be like from your inner personal side.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? And a little thing that helped me was when I did a food diary, when I had lost a lot of weight, was to write down my emotion when I was eating. So actually, was I eating today because I was hungry?
Or like, bored.
Or bored, or sad, or had an argument. It's very interesting. You see what your habit is and how you do it. And certain times of the day, I would only eat because I was stressed or tired. So yeah, loads and loads of great stuff to really think about. And I think that's why group's so important, isn't it? Because it's coming together and discussing all these things. I think being in that team of like-minded people who are going through those same things is really important.
Mm.
I'm going to try your ginger tea.
Oh, yeah, okay. I mean, you can get the ginger tea bags, which is a little bit easier to wash up.
Yeah, but I want, like, ginger and tea.
Oh, God.
What have you started?
Well, we hope that we've kind of helped you out a little bit this week. It's been a longer episode, but certainly talking about things that are on our mind is something that we want to continue. So it's not just all about the food, it's about the mind too. Next week, we'll be back with another episode on Monday. So if you've got to this point and you haven't yet subscribed or followed, please make sure that you do that so you get notified. Normally about 1 a.m. every Monday morning, a new episode comes out. So the first thing you can do on a Monday is have a little dose of Anna and Claire in your ears.
Wake up with us.
Wow.
Go to sleep with us. Well, fall asleep with us.
She did so well, didn't she? At minding her language.
So well.
Only slight references to...
I wasn't being dodgy. It's how you guys are all... You see, this is it. It's how you're interpreting what comes out of my job.
Shut up in your face. Have a great week, whatever you're up to, and enjoy your journaling and enjoy your food.
Take care. Bye for now.